Hey, everybody, and at long last, welcome back to Building the Ballot. It's been a little while, but we have big news because there was a ballot drop today. And if there's a ballot drop, then I have to get Graham Womack on the line to discuss. So welcome, Graham. How are you doing?
Hey, Adam, I'm good. And I'm very eager to talk about this ballot.
So we've got the contemporary baseball era players ballot. Just to recap, we've got three era committees now. The contemporary baseball era covers there's two ballots for the contemporary baseball era. There's the players ballot and the non-players ballot. Contemporary era in general is candidates that made their impact from 1980 to present. Although some can make a little bit of an impact before that, but this is just one of those subjective things of when they made their biggest impact. So this year we have the players. I think next year is the non-players. And then after that is like this mega ballot of everybody before 1980. And that is players, executives, umpires, Negro League candidates, everybody. That's a nightmare waiting to happen. But this one is its own nightmare in that it's a very, very stacked ballot. So yeah. What I decided I would do is name the players that are on this ballot. And I figured I didn't have you prep for this at all. I was going to do some word association. When I say their name, you tell me the first thing that comes to your mind.
Sure.
All right. So we have eight players on the ballot. I'm going to start things off with Barry Bonds.
Hall of Famer, but it's not happening this year.
Yeah. Roger Clemens.
Same.
Yep. That's the word. Same. Curt Schilling. That's the word I would go with too. Yeah. Rafael Palmeiro.
It's interesting that he's back on the ballot. There's no way in hell he's getting in this year, but I mean, I could see him at some point down the road getting in, but I don't understand why to waste a ballot spot on him.
He's the best player that I was like, why is he here? Like, yeah. I was surprised to see him. Fred McGriff.
He'll get in.
Wow, we're going right with that right away. Dale Murphy.
I like Dale Murphy, but I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what happens because he and Fred McGriff are and probably Don Mattingly are a type of candidate that are different than the other guys on this ballot. But I don't know. I like Dale Murphy. He's a great guy. We follow each other on Twitter. I've interviewed him before, but I don't think he is the favorite on this ballot.
Don Mattingly. You just mentioned him, but a word association here.
Fine. I don't know. I mean, it's, you know, nobody's going to be flipping a table over Don Mattingly one way or another this year.
Oh, flipping tables is what we do this time of year.
Totally. You and I are like the table flippers
And last but not least, Albert Bell.
Nope.
All right. So I'm going to go over some of the ground rules again. We still have 16 members on the committee, still have 12 votes needed for election. One difference is that each voter only gets three votes now. Yeah. And that goes along with the fact that there are eight candidates now instead of 10.
Yeah.
So that means instead of 64 votes to go around, there are now 48 votes to go around,
yeah,
although with two fewer candidates.
Yeah.
So that means like if everything lined up properly, like the most you could get is four inductees. And that's just if everything hit exactly right and four candidates had exactly 75%, no more, and everybody else had zero. I don't think that's going to happen this year, though. So we're going to get into it. And I asked folks on Twitter for questions as soon as this was published, and I got a lot of them. So are you ready to handle some questions from the Twitter group, or do you want to kind of talk about some first impressions first? Or did we just do the first impressions? Your call.
I mean, I sort of cheated a little, and I gave you a lot of first impressions. I don't know. We could get right into the questions, and then whatever isn't covered in the questions. I have lots of thoughts about this ballot that came out today. So probably some of those thoughts will ooze out with the questions, and then whatever
exactly
covered. Happy to talk more.
Yeah, there are a lot of tangents, I think, that'll come out from a lot of these questions. We got a great group of questions. I grouped them. The first group of questions are going to be about players that are not on this ballot. And a lot of people had some strong feelings about players that didn't make this ballot, which, you know, eight candidates, there was, you know, there's probably 30 from this era that I would vote for. It's ridiculous. So Ryan, RJ Winfield, I think he had the first question for us. He said, no questions here, just heartbroken for Lou Whitaker. Better resume than quite a few of these guys, but not the same value. Not sure what he means by the value thing at the end. But then Dan Epstein of the wonderful band, The Subway Ghosts, go listen to them. He said, Whitaker is never getting in. Just not really a question, just lamenting, you know, if he can't get in, can't even get named on the ballot, you know, when the heck can we expect him to get in? So what thoughts on Lou Whitaker? I'll start right there.
I don't know. I mean, 30 years from now, you or Jay Jaff or somebody else might be qualified to be on the ERA committee and can lead a push then for Lou Whitaker and can help, you know, bring him some belated recognition. It's sort of a litmus test of where the ERA committees are with sabermetrics. I mean, if you're into sabermetrics, you know that Lou Whitaker is a top 10 second baseman in baseball history. I mean, he's right up there. But if you're not into sabermetrics, it's like, oh, okay, Lou Whitaker, he hit, what, 285 for his career, never won any MVPs, was never remotely in that discussion. If you're not a sabermetrics person, Lou Whitaker maybe looks a bit off the mark. But if you're into sabermetrics, like I am, I mean, Lou Whitaker is an easy selection. He should have gotten in through the writers. And it's a little ridiculous how I think he's been on one ERA committee ballot so far. And
he did pretty well, not incredibly well, but I think he was just under 50% maybe.
Yeah, no. So I was really disappointed that he didn't make the ballot, and it's a little insane to me that you have somebody like Albert Bell or Rafael Palmeiro, you know, on this ballot, or Don Mattingly, and you don't have Lou Whitaker. That just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. But you know, what can you do?
Interesting that you said you think of him as a sabermetric candidate. I guess I didn't, but maybe you're right. I mean, he's let's see, on the Jaws leaderboard, we have him as 16th among second basemen in hits, and where is he in home runs? He's got to be much higher than that. He's 11th. So those are pretty good numbers. I would say that those numbers put him as a, you know, borderline Hall of Famer, considering that there's probably, what, I don't know, 18 to 22 second basemen in the Hall of Fame. Not sure exactly how many. So those, you know, traditional numbers put him right in that window. But, you know, of course, by war, because he was a great base runner, great fielder, and just never had the bad seasons. Like, I don't know. He's unique in the fact that, I published a stat on Twitter right before we chatted. He is the all-time leader in seasons between 3 and 7 war. He never got more than 7 war, which is why people, you know, downplay his peak a little bit. But it was this, like, his peak was like a low level hum. It was like well above average, but not quite screeching. But he was just so good for so long.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm looking at his Jaws right now. And I have to say, first off, I thought he was more like 7th or 8th overall in Jaws for second baseman. So he's actually ranked 13th. I think one thing that does bring him down is his peak really is not as impressive as pretty much everybody in front of him. You know, Whitaker was a guy who stayed real steady for a long time. And I think you have to contextualize, you know, kind of what he did, just in terms of, his best years were pretty much in the 80s, which, I mean, you know, if he started his career 10 years later, his offensive stats would have been a lot better. But it's just, you know, it's kind of when he played. It's even the ballpark he was in. I mean, Tiger Stadium, you know, I think it had pretty high grass. So a guy like, you know, like a Whitaker, who's not a real power hitter. I don't know. I'm kind of pulling things out of error right now, but I have to think maybe Tiger Stadium didn't help his numbers. I don't know. I'd have to dig into that a little bit more.
Let's see. The the air for the hitting air for Tiger Stadium is right around league average. So I don't think it hurt any more than it helped or anything. So I think we can kind of leave that one out. But yeah, it's interesting what you say about like what if he started his career later, because he finished with like his highest batting averages and OPS pluses. It's like 290, 301, 293, just his last five seasons OPS plus 141, 137, 133, 122, 129. Like he was at his offensive peak, like as he retired, which it seems very strange, but yeah, I'm right there with the several people who replied and said, where the heck is Lou Whitaker? I think he should have been on this ballot. I think he was also one of the feel good choices that the committee could have made. Like we were talking about Lou Whitaker before this. And I said, you know, I think the biggest blemish on Lou Whitaker's record is the fact that in the middle of a playoff run, he injured himself dancing with his wife at a wedding. Like that's, I'm ready for wholesome Hall of Fame talk. And Lou Whitaker is like the beginning of it for me. I don't know.
He gave me an hour and 15 minutes off of a cold call. I mean, you know, I had Greg Nettles one time be like, how did you get this number? This is my vacation home in Tennessee or whatever. And I did not interview Greg Nettles. He was not up for that. And he's not the only player who's shot me down, but man, Whitaker was great. He's a nice man. The Hall of Fame would be better for his inclusion.
Mm-hmm. And it's harder and harder to explain the lack of Whitaker's presence with, I love Alan Trammell. Trammell's there. They belong together. You can't make me pick who is better. Like I find them both, you know, they're slightly different candidates. They arrive at pretty much the same spot for me. And yeah, like you said, the Hall of Fame would be better with him. But this is not a Lou Whitaker podcast, so let's move on to a couple other players. Although I'm totally open to a Lou Whitaker podcast anytime.
Yeah, no, I mean, we could probably get Lou Whitaker on that podcast. So I would make that happen if we did a Lou Whitaker podcast.
You heard it here first, folks. Lou Whitaker joining Building Ballot at some point. All right. Someone named George asks, where the hell is Keith Hernandez? And I saw this not in replies to us, but a bunch of other folks were wondering where Keith Hernandez was on this list.
I don't know. I mean, did Jay Jaffe or did he clarify if Keith Hernandez is classic era or contemporary era? Because I know Jay replied the other day and told me like Dave Parker is classic era.
That's a good question. I believe I double checked and all the ones that he had were consistent with the ones that the Hall of Stats had. And Hernandez is on contemporary baseball on the Hall of Stats. So I think he was eligible and just look past. I mean, maybe they'll put him on the other one, but that would be pretty cruel to him too, because he's got a lot of players he's competing with in that case.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think Keith Hernandez is still kind of an underrated candidate. I don't know if it's understood how good he was defensively. Maybe he was fairly open about, you know, using cocaine in the early part of his career. And then I believe he quit fairly early and kind of cleaned up his act, but there might be some people who kind of unfairly, you know, associate that with him still. I don't know. I mean, that's speculation on my part.
There were rumors that hindered Tim Raines' candidacy for a while, and Dave Parker as well. He's still obviously on the outside trying to get, and Dave Parker is not eligible for this group. He was part of that much earlier group, which we'll cover in a couple of years. But I guess I see Hernandez as a very strong candidate, one who's probably even more underrated than someone else that was brought up by Jim Konigsberger. He mentioned his question was literally just Dwight Evans ? Like where's Dewey? Dewey had 50% on the modern baseball era ballot just a couple of years ago.
Yeah. This is one reason I don't like this, you know, having an era based system where you don't vote on the same players year in, year out. I mean, Dwight Evans had momentum a few years ago and he can't even make this ballot. It doesn't make any sense to me. I figured he was a sure thing to be on this ballot. The one thing I'll say is, like, I assume the Hall of Fame's operating in good faith and putting together the strongest ballots that it can. But honestly, Fred McGriff benefits with not having Lou Whitaker or Dwight Evans on this ballot, because you know, it would probably, it could potentially take votes away from him. I don't see Fred McGriff losing too many votes to like Barry Bonds or other steroid candidates. I mean, it's like, if you want to vote for Fred McGriff, you're probably a type of voter who, you know, maybe has disdain still for the steroid guys.
Right. I mean, that's a huge topic that maybe we can jump into right now. Like, this ballot is split in half. There's the icky half with Bonds, Clemens, Palmeiro, and Schilling. And then there's the non-icky, pure baseball half, or 37.5, depending what you want to do with Albert Bell. There's the Murphy, the Mattingly, and of course the McGriff, the three M's there. Albert Bell, I know that there is some suspicion, but you know, nothing has ever been, you know, come out of that. But also, people just didn't like that he was such a surly jerk. To a lot of people, which, you know, I, through a modern lens, I try to give a little bit more of a benefit of the doubt. There are some pretty terrible stories, of course, of things that he did, but.
You know, it's really interesting. I you probably remember, but I interviewed Albert Bell when I was writing for Sporting News. I spent about an hour on the phone with him. And when we talked, like, he was great. Like, he answered all my questions. He wasn't surly or rude to me. There was a point in the conversation where it sounded like his young daughter was in the background saying like, "Daddy, come play with us." And, you know, I thought to myself, you know, maybe this guy's changed. But there's been some stuff about him in the news since then, without really getting into that. And then it's just, I don't know. I mean, he's not high up my list of candidates I really care about. I care a lot about Lou Whitaker. I care about Dwight Evans. I care about, you know, any number of guys who didn't come close to cracking this ballot. And you know, even some of the steroid guys, like, I'm okay with Barry Bonds, like, eventually being in the Hall of Fame. It's a little ridiculous to not have him in there at some point, at least in my view, and others will have different views on that. But at the end of the day, he's Barry freaking Bonds. I mean, it's, put the man in the Hall of Fame. It's obvious. Yeah, he did whatever he did late in his career, but he was a Hall of Famer before it. He's one of the great outfielders in baseball history. It's pretty indisputable to me.
The thing, I'll probably say this a bunch more times, but the longer we keep Bonds, Clemens, Schilling, etc., out of the Hall of Fame, means more years that we have to talk about them every year instead of Lou Whitaker, Dwight Evans. If I could wave a magic wand and make it all go away and just put them all in, that way we never have to talk about them again. Yeah, that would be great. Seriously. Would I feel good about wasting? I'm using the word wasting here. Like, if I had three votes here, would I feel good about voting for Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens and Curt Schilling and not Fred McGriff or Dale Murphy? I'd think long and hard about it. I can understand why they sit on this ballot for a long time, because, you know, not everybody is going to get these chances year after year. I just wish that they were put in on the BBWA ballot so we didn't have to, you know, worry about this anymore. But instead, you know, building the ballot is now a, you know, steroid I don't even know the words I'm trying to use here. Like, we're worried about morality and shit like that, that I don't want to talk about. I want to talk about how good Dwight Evans was, and you know, about the unique career shape of Lou Whitaker and things like that. One more Q&A we had about players who missed. Our friend Mark Shirk there, exploring baseball history, he asked specifically, why would McGuire get left out of this ballot if they're considering steroid guys? I get looking at some clean / less controversial players, but he was better than Palmeiro. No, is it the 3,000 hits? And that's led to some conversation about like McGuire versus Palmeiro. Yeah. I tend to agree. I think that Mark McGuire is the better player. If you heavily weigh peak, Palmeiro, of course, hung on longer and got the 500 home runs and the 3,000 hits. I think they're both, you know, their numbers, of course, are Hall of Fame worthy, but how many steroid guys can you fit on one ballot, I guess, is the question.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I think of it this way that, you know, yeah, if it's 1996 and nobody cares about steroids and I'm a general manager putting together a team, I would rather have Mark McGwire in my lineup than Rafael Palmeiro. Like, I don't have to think too long and too hard about it. Like, I think a peak Mark McGwire, just in terms of offensive output, he reminds me, I don't know, of like a Harmon Killebrew, but probably a bit better than that. Somebody who, you know, isn't necessarily going to hit for a great average, but man, you know, plenty of home runs, good on base, in just a devastating bat in the middle of your lineup. And I know that Rafael Palmeiro put up big numbers some years, but I just never quite thought of him the same way as I would have thought of peak Mark McGwire.
Has McGwire done a little bit of rehabilitation work on his legacy, maybe too? Like, he's a little bit more public. I feel like we just haven't seen Palmeiro and McGwire. You know, I feel like we see him now. He's kind of owned up to things and been a little bit more open. Yeah. That's just the impression I get.
You know, it's funny. So I did a few pieces here and there for the Sacramento Bee this year of getting credentialed to go to A's or Giants games. And I was credentialed when Dave Stewart had his number retired in September. And I actually got a few minutes with Mark McGwire on the field right before the ceremony. It was crazy. If I had had 20 minutes there, I probably could have talked to four or five legends. I mean, Dennis Eckersley was there. Reggie Jackson was there, you know. Tony La Russa delayed the start of the game because he was talking so long, like during the ceremony. It was great. I mean, there were only like 12,000 fans there because it's Oakland, but still, I mean, you know, it was interesting. But no, it's funny. McGwire has sort of a reputation. I've seen a little bit around Twitter of just kind of having been a jerk during his career or whatever, or just not being great with the media, but he was fine with me. I mean, we only spoke for a few minutes, but you know, I didn't really go there asking him about the steroid stuff, but he was perfectly fine. And I don't know if it would have been an issue if I'd asked him a question about it. I know, you know, he publicly came clean about it. What was that now? 12 years ago, like 2010. So he's owned up to it. But I don't know. I think it's less a question of his contrition and more just baseball, especially the older voters. I don't think they've come around to honoring, you know, admitted steroid or even suspected steroid users yet.
Yeah, and it might have also just come down to the fact that McGwire has been on an error committee ballot before and Palmeiro has not, so maybe that was it.
Yeah, and actually, oh, that's interesting. Okay, so, and I'm usually the person who knows this stuff like the back of my hand, but I hadn't realized that Palmeiro hadn't actually been on a ballot before, because I knew McGwire. It seems the sense I get with steroid candidates is they come up once, they don't make it, and it's like, well, we've considered them. Let's move on now, you know? Right.
Yeah, McGwire came on way back in 2017, actually, and got the less than 5 of 16 votes and hasn't been on since. And this is the first time for Palmeiro here.
Yeah. I mean, it'll be really interesting to see how the other guys do. I mean, I've sort of had the feeling that Bonds and Clemens will get something like 6 to 8 votes apiece, but really don't know. I mean, there is a chance that when the results come out, you know, in a month, that it everybody who has a whiff of steroids next to them could have less than 5 votes each. I mean, there is a possibility of that.
We could have everybody just get 5 votes and nobody gets in, which is what I'm afraid of with the fact that we have like 2 halves of this ballot.
Yeah.
We'll get to that later though. My buddy Jake here has a question. He's the Mo Jorgen on Twitter. He says, honestly, not sure on questions, but I would love to hear more about Bell's case for getting in. And we covered Albert Bell a little bit before, but do you think that there is a case to be made for Albert Bell getting in the Hall?
Statistically, you could make a case for almost anybody on this ballot if you really wanted to. I mean, Bell's case is probably a peak case. You look at how he did from, I'd say, probably the mid to late 90s. I mean, he was devastating. And the Cleveland Indians of the 90s, to me, are one of the great underrated teams in recent decades for baseball. I mean, that was a borderline dynasty. You look at all the players that they had. You know, Manny Ramirez, Jim Tomei, Roberto Alomar, you know, and then Bell is right at the center of that. The question becomes, is that enough? And with this group, I don't think it is. And yeah, it's just, I think his personal issues still really have to be sorted out before he can really be a viable Hall of Fame candidate. And that's the kind of thing that, you know, it might benefit him with some time as some of these guys get in, the ballot starts to look a little thinner.
We got a 9-year span with 300 average, 377, 582. That is a 151 OPS plus, 350 home runs, 344 doubles, because he, of course, famously had that 50-50 year in there as well. 1,096 RBIs. Again, this is in 9 years. So the per 162 on these is 43 homers, 42 doubles, 134 runs batted in. Just, yeah. Wow. But yeah, there's not much else besides those 9 years. He played one more year in Baltimore where he was slightly above average hitter and had two part-time seasons before it all started with Cleveland when he was Joey Bell. But yeah, it's a little bit of like a, I don't know, maybe like a Kirby Puckett type case where just a dominant player, injury slowed him down, maybe looks a little bit better through the lens of the time that he was playing. Like, I think that Albert Bell's, you know, maybe his OBP is a little bit lower than you might want out of your big slugger these days. Obviously he wasn't a great defender. He played low value positions, wasn't great on the bases. I don't know. I would rather have all eight of these candidates in so we could talk about other players than to have any of them out. But Albert Bell is my eighth of eight on this ballot. Yeah. And I think that that's probably true for a lot of people.
Yeah, that's the case for me as well.
Cool. We have a few questions about the process. Theo Jerome asks, thoughts on why they cut it down to only eight names on the ballot rather than 10?
I don't know. I mean, I think the Hall of Fame is forever tinkering with the Veterans or Era Committee process and wants to make it so you don't have a glut of people getting in, but you also don't have no one ever getting in, because it's bad. You know, it's like what was, I forget the exact number of years, but it was something like 15 or so years that there were no living players that were getting in through the Veterans or Era Committee process. I mean, and basically from Bill Mazeroski until what was it that broke the was it Alan Trammell and Jack Morris the year they got in was when you finally had that broken.
Right, because they were before Simmons, right?
Yeah, okay. Simmons came after. And then there was the Harold Baines, obviously, year. Harold Baines and Lee Smith.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. So, no, I mean, I think for the Hall of Fame, I think what happened is, you know, I was stoked by a lot of the guys who got in the last cycle, you know, last winter. But I can't think the Hall of Fame was overly thrilled, especially about the Golden Days ballot putting in four guys, right? I mean, so I think their goal is to prevent that kind of thing from happening again in the near term future.
Yeah, I would have been happier, and I think maybe they might have designed it this way too. If four went in from the early baseball and two had gone in from the Golden, that might have been what they were hoping for, given the Negro League candidates were being considered for the first time in so long. So I think the only thing that I have as to why they may have cut it back is it's fewer names to focus on and maybe fewer names to be divided over. And I think we have to see if that plays out, because there are also less votes to go around. So I think we're just going to have the same issue with splitting. So I think they wanted to see if like there was more focus on a smaller number of candidates, maybe more of a consensus could form. We'll see. More candidates, it gets divided. We can see that in even the poll that I posted the last few days on Twitter, where it had 343 people vote and only Bonds and Clemens barely made 75%, because, you know, there's so many great players that people have thrown votes everywhere. So maybe by limiting it, they can control that a little bit. We'll see if it works. Our friend Brian O'Connor at BOC for the record, essentially adds to this. He says they changed this to make it harder to get in, ? Which I think it might. It's certainly harder for any candidate to get in, but I think what they are hoping is that once somebody has been named to the ballot, maybe it's a little bit easier for them to get in with the focus. Again, we'll see how it plays out.
Yeah, I mean, If I had to guess, it's probably slightly harder than it was last year to get in, but I don't know. I mean, still overall, we're still in a conservative period for, you know, the veterans or era committee. I mean, we're not at the stage where we're having everybody eligible every single year, which, I mean, that's the way it was done in the past. I'm generally of the opinion that going back to that would be good, but there are also a lot of problems with doing it that way as well. So I don't know. It seems like it's been forever an imperfect process, and I just hope it evolves beyond this, because I don't love this year's ballot. I'll be frank. I think you and I could have put together a better ballot than the one that came out. It's just this, the ballot doesn't have a lot of logic to it to me. It's just, yeah. I mean, aside from some of the obvious names, you know, that should be on there, some of the names just really feel randomly grasped at. I could be wrong on this, but that's how I feel.
If you have the 8 best candidates on the ballot, does that essentially guarantee that nobody gets elected, though?
I don't know. I mean, that's a good question. I mean,
the conspiracy theorist in me looks at this and says, well, we've already had Murphy, Mattingly, and who's the third one there? And Bell. They've all been on 2 times each and all gotten the bare minimum. So it makes me wonder if there's a few things that make me wonder if this is designed to get Bonds of Clemens in, which seems strange for the Hall of Fame to do. So bear with me. So first of all, after this election, they are enacting a 1-year waiting period between the BBWA ballot and the era committees. They are not enacting it this year to therefore allow Bonds, Clemens, Schilling, et cetera, to be on this ballot. It seems very strange that they would like change something after the fact that looks like it's benefiting Bonds, Clemens, Schilling, et cetera. So that's my first thing. And then the fact that they added 3 candidates who have a proven track record of not having any traction to go up against them. I don't know. That's 2 things, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I read it differently with Bonds and Clemens. I to me, and this is, again, this isn't based on any conversations with anybody. This is just my own just sort of conspiratorial thinking. My thought is that the Hall of Fame didn't want to look like it was arbitrarily excluding them by enacting a rule change that would have forced them off this year's ballot. But if you allow them on, knowing that they're not going to have the votes to get in, you're like, oh, well, we did everything that we were supposed to do. And it's the kind of thing you can do if you know that they aren't going in this year. So you might as well just make it look like you're being extra fair to them, and they just weren't able to make it.
Right. I mean, the flip side of what I argued was, now you're taking Bonds, Clemens, Schilling, et cetera, and putting them up against 2 of the most, or 3 now with Fred McGriff, new to the ballot. So you're putting them up with 3 of the most wholesome candidates. So that way, maybe the votes get directed to Mattingly, Murphy, and McGriff, and then they can say, well, we put Bonds, Clemens, Schilling, et cetera, on the ballot, and nobody voted for them. And, you know, then they get the McGuire treatment and get dropped off the next one, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, and I will say, I actually think that Schilling is going to be fairly competitive on this ballot.
Why do people keep saying that? I see it everywhere. Why? I don't know.
So I'm no fan of Kurt Schilling. You know, I'm not going to be ecstatic the day he gets in or whatever. But for me, I just always thought his candidacy was kind of similar to Jim Bunning's, where Jim Bunning, you know, another well-known conservative person, you know, he served in Congress, came close with the writers, didn't quite get in. I think he topped out at like 74.7% or something. I'd have to double check that. I might be thinking Nellie Fox in my head. But Bunning needed 2 tries to get in with the Veterans Committee. So that's my hunch on what I think is going to happen with Schilling. I don't see him getting in this year. He might, but I could totally see him getting 9 or 10 votes and then getting in on a weaker ballot.
I don't know. People keep using that word conservative, but I don't think that word does not mean what you think it means, essentially, is what I want to say to these people. Like,
sure,
there's nothing conservative about you know, Curt Schilling's track record over the last few years. I don't know. I find it bizarre. Some people point out that, you know, he asked not to be included in the voting. And to clarify, I believe he asked not to be on the BBWA ballot in his last year because he wanted to be looked at by the Veterans Committee.
Yeah,
so this is what he wants.
I would like to meet Curt Schilling and tell him, my name is Diego Montoya. You killed my joy for automatically enshrining people based on sabermetrics. Prepare to die. And the last part is said completely in jest because, I don't. But
There's a joke there about, you know, threatening and then taking it back with Curt Schilling.
God.
I won't go there. Oh my gosh. Where was I in these questions? Our friend Mark has another question about the process. Do you know who's on the committee? I was surprised how many former players were adamant he belonged in the hall. Ooh, I don't have the context here of who he means by he. Boggs, Brett come to mind. Oh, in the Mattingly doc on MLB. So talking about Don Mattingly here. A lot of players were adamant that he belongs in the Hall of Fame. I believe that we don't know who's on the committee until a week before they meet. That's what I heard, but
let me see. I was driving this morning when
it's not on the announcement. If that's where you're going.
Yeah. I was going to check and see. Interesting. Okay. Yeah. No, I was curious if it was in the press release, but they sent it to me this morning and I am making time drag as I look through my emails. That's for another time.
We have one brief reprieve for a positive question. Justin B. Landeman on Twitter says, to some extent, Gil Hodges' election was a positive case for the character clause, right? Wondering if that could change how Murphy gets assessed this time around.
Maybe. I mean, the thing to remember about Gil Hodges is that he was up for consideration 35 times, at least. I mean, it was 15. I think he went the full 15 with the BBWAA. And then I know of at least 20 times that he was up for consideration with either the Veterans or the ERA committee. It took him a very long time to get in. And I don't know. Dale Murphy's still around. Dale Murphy's a good Twitter follow. Gil Hodges died when he was, 47? I mean, he's a tragic figure in baseball history. So I just think it's two different cases, and it might not augur super well for Murphy regardless. He might be a candidate who is on the ballot for a very long time and finally gets in very late in life or after he's passed on. There's just these type of candidates.
Yeah, I guess that is a different dynamic from our discussions last year, is that all of these candidates are living.
Yeah.
Not something that we see a lot. Dale Murphy, probably on the older side of the candidates, but you know, nobody's incredibly old on this ballot.
No.
I like to see, you know, nice guys rewarded. So, do I think that he's a slam dunk of a sabermetric candidate? No, I don't. I think he had a great peak, and I think he was one of the biggest stars in baseball. And quite frankly, these days, that's good enough for me. I like his peak a lot. I like that he was a very dynamic, well-rounded player. So I would be a yes on Dale Murphy. And if the character clause does get him extra brownie points, especially if that second case that I brought up recently where, you know, it's literally St. Dale Murphy up against all these horrible people from, you know, the last few years of the BBWA ballot, maybe horrible people is strong. Probably it's not, as my next question will go into. But I could see a case for the character clause playing a big part in this election.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and other stuff about Murphy, that's a plaque that a lot of people would want to see. I mean, if I was at the Hall of Fame, I would want to see Dale Murphy's plaque. It'd be one I'd be happy to see. I mean, he's a great guy for peak value, for fame. Yeah. And you know, he belongs for that. He definitely isn't the strongest candidate by sabermetrics. I mean, Dwight Evans is a fair bit better for that. And I wish Dwight Evans would have made this ballot, but I'm not going to complain though that like Dale Murphy made it at Dwight Evans' expense. I'd rather just they were both on the ballot, honestly.
Mm-hmm. I I just want people to start getting in so we can clear this backlog. I mean, people have been getting in through these ERA committees, not so much from this ERA though. This ERA still has way too many good candidates. So we just need to make sure that we keep pulling people off of the list so we can keep moving forward.
Yeah.
Yaku Night Owl on Twitter asks a tough one. It's also about the general, a general question about the character clause. He says, setting performance enhancing drugs aside, is there room to have a discussion about domestic violence, fermenting violence, or inappropriate relationships with minors, having a hard time with Bonds, Schilling, and Clemens? And this is a growing concern I have about so many candidates. Like, there's so, like I said about Whitaker, like there's so few to feel good about these days. Like, there's things coming out about Kenny Lofton lately. And so I think there's room for this conversation, but I think that this conversation also makes me just wish that the Hall of Fame process, we could just talk about baseball. And I don't know, maybe
yeah, that's... I mean, I'm sorry, go on.
No, go for it.
I was going to say, I mean, character is part of the consideration. I mean, there is the character clause. It does matter. And I would hope that every candidate is thoroughly, thoroughly discussed and thoroughly vetted, and that all parts of their candidacy is looked at. I wouldn't want anything swept under the rug, but I would look at every facet of what makes a Hall of Famer, and I wouldn't focus excessively on any one thing. I would look at everybody's entire case, and then I would make determinations based on that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, the sabermetric nerd in me, says, you should use your three votes on Bonds, Clemens, and Schilling. But if I had that ballot to fill out, that I can promise you is not what I would do. Maybe we'll get to, what three votes I would actually make later if I force you to do it. I'll have to do it myself. But anyway,
sure.
A few questions about the overall results. Mark from Exploring Baseball History, again, he had some great questions, says, so is anybody getting in? Is the presence of steroid guys who are obviously deserving, that makes him think that no one will get enough votes? And I think we kind of touched on this with the different ways that this could go. Did you have anything else to add to that?
I think Fred McGriff will get in. I could maybe see one other person getting in. I don't necessarily know who that is. I mean, like the year that Harold Baines got elected, I didn't see that one coming. And now Harold Baines is part of why I see Fred McGriff getting in, because I think the way the committee dealt with it was, that Baines would have had 3,000 hits if not for, the 81 and 94, 95 strikes. And with McGriff, he would have had 500 home runs if not for the 94, 95 strike. So I feel fairly confident that he'll get in. But the wild card beyond that, I really have no idea. I mean, I don't know. What do you think?
I see three outcomes. One of them is that they don't collude and nobody agrees and everything is split and nobody gets in, which brings me to not really a question, but a point that Mark Armour made that I wanted to comment on. He said, unless there is voter conclusion, zero of these players will make the cut in the existing rules. Note, I fully support voter collusion. So that I gave you the no collusion scenario there, nobody getting in. And then if there is collusion, if they do, maybe collusion is too strong a word, but if they do, conspire to say, how are you planning to vote? Let's organize this and make sure we get inductees, which I'm pretty sure they did last year. Yeah. I see two ways. One of them is that, yes, it is the year for Bonds and Clemens, those things that are set up. So it would be Bonds and Clemens, and I think McGriff would go into to kind of pacify. So if a player is getting in, I agree that it's McGriff. So I either see it's McGriff with Bonds and Clemens, or things go totally haywire on the other side, and there it is such an anti-PED complicated candidate that it's going to be McGriff, Murphy, and Mattingly.
Yeah, that would McGriff, Murphy, Mattingly. If we got a class of that, that would be interesting. I mean, my gut too is with Mattingly, since he's, I has he, he's not retiring as a manager, right? Like he's still planning to keep.
Oh, you cut out there for a second. You said he's planning to keep.
Yeah, well, Mattingly, I was asking because I sort of see Mattingly maybe having a Joe Torre-esque kind of candidacy where maybe the Hall of Fame waits to see how his managing proceeds from this point. You know, because you could kind of punt on Mattingly for a while. Yeah, and then with Dale Murphy, like, again, I love Dale Murphy. He's a great guy, but I could see Murphy getting passed over again. I think one of his recent totals was having less than five votes, right? I mean, it's, you know, there hasn't been a real groundswell of support for him yet. He's got some real passionate followers on Twitter. It's a guy, Joel Bronson, who anytime I tweet about the Hall of Fame, the first response from Joel is always about Dale Murphy, to the point that, yeah, I've even had to ask Joel, okay, man, like, who's your second favorite candidate? Like, who else do you like? And Murphy gets that kind of support, you know, it's just, he's somebody who has an emotional pull with certain types of fans. And you can't necessarily say that about every guy on this ballot.
Yeah. Could see the scenario where he does benefit from being the anti Bonds Clemens, like poster boy almost. Although I think McGriff does hang on to that pretty well too. But yeah, anyway, I either see zero or three inductees apparently. Maybe there's a case where it's McGriff only, or McGriff and. All right, so four. Nobody, just McGriff. McGriff, Bonds, Clemens. And McGriff, Murphy, Mattingly. And the McGriff, Murphy, Mattingly is just it's like everybody's just throwing birds at Bonds, Clemens, and Schilling and saying, you're not getting in. We'll put in literally anybody but you.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I guess my prediction would probably be McGriff plus wild card. I mean, Curt Schilling could get in this time. It'd be a bummer. Yeah, there's 12 people on this ballot who 12 voters who just anything that Curt Schilling has said on Twitter is of no issue to them. They just, see him as a Hall of Famer. So who knows?
Tom Madigan, I think we touched on this pretty well already, said, do you think the steroid guys were included? Just that the committee can say, nope, this panel won't take them either and set them aside for a while.
Yeah, that's been my suspicion.
I did note that the couple of things that make it look like it's lined up for Bonds and Clemens to go in, but I also do have my suspicions that will actually be how it plays out. Maybe they are just doing everything they can to grease the wheels of Bonds and Clemens, and maybe Schilling I include here too, and then they can say, look, we tried and still didn't happen.
Yeah, I know too, just like, I think I've maybe mentioned this on this podcast before, but I know like Brett Saberhagen's another guy who I've interviewed before, and he's fun to talk to. But he and I were emailing for a while after like I interviewed him, and then we stopped emailing because I tend to be a little bit more forgiving of players who use steroids. Not that I liked it. I honestly really hate it. I hate that was part of baseball, but I also, that's the way I see it. It was part of baseball. You go to any era in baseball history and there's something bizarre that was the norm then that, wasn't great, but it was part of the game, and you just have to contextualize it. And I think steroids were one of those things. But yeah, the Saberhagen did not see things that way. And I would suspect that there are going to be a fair number of older voters on this committee who will be of similar minds and be like, no, like, we don't want to vote for those guys. Like, I could see an older Hall of Famer being like, no, God, I worked hard to get there. I didn't take steroids or any crap like that. And, maybe they took amphetamines and they don't think the same about it, but right. I don't see them wanting to share a stage with Barry Bonds. Like, I just don't.
Yeah, interesting. Especially hearing that about Brett Saberhagen, I there's not too many players I look at and say, wow, I want to be friends with that player. I want to be friends with Brett Saberhagen. Seems cool.
Yeah, no, he's fun, and I want to reach out to him again at some point. Older pitchers, for some reason, Dave Steeb is a delight.
So glad to hear that.
His mom is fun too. I went through his elderly mother to get in contact because she had a listed number, and she and I wound up talking about how he was a better pitcher than Jack Morris during the 80s, and we both agree on that. So
oh my gosh. Dave, honey, talk to this Graham guy. He agrees that you are better than Jack. I love it. I have one more question here from D. Quinn. I lied. He has two questions here, but one I think we already covered pretty well. He says two things for you. One, how do you think the steroid guys will do? And I think we kind of beat that one. And two, do you think all voters will vote for three guys?
And nah. Oh, sorry.
Oh, no. Please go. That's the hot take. You got the hot take here.
So, I mean, I was thinking about this while we were sitting here, and the strategic voting, you look at who the strategic voting was done on behalf of, like who got in through that. So what was it now? I mean, we had Gil Hodges, we had Jim Cott, we had Tony Oliva, and then was the fourth guy, was that Manny Mignoso? Yes. Okay. So it's like, those are all four candidates without a whiff of controversy. Those are four candidates who, you know, sentimental appeal. Honestly, the candidate who had a little bit of controversy, Dick Allen, fell just short in that process. This year's ballot is much more controversial. And I don't see a uniting of goodwill among voters and being like, you know what, let's put our egos and our own pet agendas aside and let us vote strategically for the four guys who, or however many guys we want to go in. If I had to guess, I imagine this is going to be a year of competing agendas, and, you know, I'd be really interested to be a fly on the wall and hear what sort of discussions get had, but I don't see the potential for strategic voting from this bunch.
That maybe swings a little bit more towards a scenario with just Fred McGriff gets in, because I think if people are going to not use all their votes, it's because they're going to vote for Fred McGriff and nobody else, because the others weren't good enough to them, and the others were, some weren't good enough and some were tainted.
Yeah. I mean, you look at 48 votes to go around, say McGriff snags, I don't know, say he's not quite unanimous, but he snags like 15 of them. That leaves 33 other votes for the other nine guys. I mean, and it's...
Other seven guys, though.
This time. Oh, God, I'm doing it again. Sorry. I keep thinking of this as a 10 player ballot. So, 33 votes for seven guys, and it's perfectly easy to... There might even be leftover votes at the end of this, you know, just there's going to be certain candidates who I just don't see doing real well this year.
I made a list of the biggest snubs from this ballot by Hall rating, and a lot of them we touched on already.
True.
Whitaker, and they're sorted by Hall rating just because that's what I do. Whitaker at 144. Kevin Brown, we didn't bring up yet, at 137. Yeah. Kenny Lofton briefly came up, not in the greatest light, at 133. David Cone at 128. Willie Randolph at 124. Buddy Bell at 124. I haven't heard any bad things about Willie Randolph or Buddy Bell. It'd be nice to hear them brought up more often in these conversations.
Yeah.
Mark McGwire also at 124. Dwight Evans also at 124. That's a popular number. Sabre Hagen, we mentioned, at 121. Sammy Sosa didn't make this one either at 117. Hernandez at 116 and Steve at 114. Any of those jump out as any that you want to touch on here?
It was interesting with Kevin Brown. I take a real long view with the Hall of Fame usually. And like, I would assume that at some point down the road, Kevin Brown will get in, but it was interesting. I took a poll on Twitter recently saying, will Kevin Brown, you know, ever get in the Hall of Fame? And only like 25% of people voted yes. And that was a bit surprising to me, because I don't see Kevin Brown getting in anytime soon, but put it out 50 or 70 years, and it seems like he has a pretty good chance to go in at some point down the road.
I swear I've heard more people make a case for like Jose Canseco or Bobby Bonilla than I have Kevin Brown. Like, he just never gets talked about. Like, considering the pitcher that he was, you just never hear about him. And it can't just be the Mitchell report that he was in, which, you know, of course, that's going to sour some people. But he also has this thing where it seems like he's just criminally underrated as well. Yeah. And the thing about criminally underrated players is you need people to make a case for you. And then I think when you have the fact that he seems like he was a genuine bona fide asshole, he is linked to the Mitchell report. He's not even getting that like groundswell that a underrated candidate needs. And it's just, there's nothing happening. Like it's unbelievable to see.
Yeah. I mean, and I got a lot of interesting responses. Like when I did that poll, or at least one that comes to mind was somebody pointing out that you can't really associate Brown with one team for too much of his Hall of Fame case. I mean, his best years, it seems like were probably San Diego and with the Marlins, and then at the start of his tenure with the Dodgers. And I know early on with the Rangers, I think he had a year where he won 20 games, I want to say. Yeah, it's not like, you know, he had this Juan Marichal-esque, brilliant run with one team and you can just get behind it. It's just, yeah, he comes across as sort of a mercenary with anger issues and an appearance in the Mitchell report. So yeah, I mean, I think he's one of the best pitchers of the 90s. I think he was kind of the counterpart to Pedro Martinez. Maybe not quite as good, but up there. He's definitely, you know, if it's 1997 and I need somebody to front a rotation for me, Kevin Brown is going to be one of the very first names I look at, you know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I have nothing else to add to that. I think that's 100%. Kenny Lofton, I was a little surprised that he, not as surprised as some other candidates. I was shocked that Lou Whitaker didn't make it. Surprised about Evans and Lofton. I was less so, just because he hasn't had any momentum.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Lofton, you know, putting aside character issues, I think with Lofton, part of it is there still isn't quite a determination with what to do with his career. It's like, do you look at the journeyman second half of his career, or do you look at the first half when he's with the Indians and he is one of the best leadoff hitters, arguably in baseball history? I mean, it's just, if he had kept that kind of career trajectory his entire career, wouldn't be any discussion. He would have been in the Hall of Fame probably a long time ago, but it's just, you have those two halves of his career and they're two vastly different halves of his career. And then, yeah, since then there's been some character stuff that's popped up too. And it's just, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens with him in the future as a candidate.
Yeah. I mean, Lofton is one of those players that I like vividly like remember pretending to be as a kid. You know, we had like this little flimsy fence and, you know, I'm trying to like reach over the wall and make catches and stuff, trying to pretend to be Kenny Lofton. He was so cool. Griffey was similarly cool back in the day. You know, Lofton was a different kind of cool. I don't know, maybe it was he looked straight out of Major League because, you know, the Indians uniforms and say hey, and he was fast as lightning. But I don't know, maybe I'm dating myself there. But
well, and in Kenny Lofton's case too, you know, where Willie Mays Hayes shows up at the start of the movie and announces that he's going to put on a hitting display and then it doesn't go so hot for him. I mean, Kenny Lofton could do that in the early part of his career. I mean, his numbers were legit. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and he could walk to get on base too, which of course wasn't quite appreciated then. Yeah. But yeah, I think that list again shows that there's another, you know, another second ballot that could have come out of this.
Oh, totally.
And probably even a third. You know, those were 12 players that I mentioned. So, you know, if we take like, I don't know, I could go into like the ridiculous number of candidates.
Well, let's do this since we're the guys who do this. I mean, if you were going to make a second ballot, I'll offer up my eight names first. So obviously Dwight Evans, Lou Whitaker, let's see, Kevin Brown, Keith Hernandez, Mark McGuire. Let's see, who do you do for your last three? For your last three, you could do, I'm really, really thinking here. Man, it's hard to say, but I mean, Willie Randolph would be fun. I don't necessarily think he's a Hall of Famer, but I would love to see him get some actual consideration. And then, gosh, two final names. I guess, you know, you could throw Lofton on there. And then, yeah, maybe somebody like a David Cone or an Oral Hershiser. Yeah.
Did you get Steve or?
No. Gosh. Yeah, I mean, and that's how many names there are. Because, yeah, Dave Steve, right. he needs to have consideration at some point. I mean, and it's just, yeah, it's crazy. People who, like Steve is, he's been quite popular in the sabermetric community. I mean, you know, he there has not been a real discussion about him among Hall of Fame voters. It just really hasn't happened yet.
Yeah. And we've still haven't mentioned, you know, Will Clark or some like hipster candidates, as I like to call them, you know, that might be like a Kevin Apier or Chuck Finley or Chet Lemon there's also Oral Hershiser, John Olerud, Dwight Gooden had that ridiculous peak, Bernie Williams.
Sure.
More people should probably like Jack Clark than they do.
Jack Clark is super underrated.
Oh yeah. If you love Jack Morris, I would love to show you a pitcher named Dennis Martinez, you know, that type of thing. Yeah. Ellis Burks, Tony Phillips, Brett Butler. You know, it's so deep. You know, people also make their cases for Willie Wilson. Frank White might be the other. I'm not sure. But Mark Grace, most hits of the 90s. It's literally more than three ballots deep.
Oh yeah, no, totally. I really don't like this whole restricting it to eight players for the last 42 years. You know, it just doesn't make a ton of sense to me. And I guess it's not quite 42 years because they cut it off. What for this year? It's 15 years in the past. Mm-hmm. So you're really talking 1980 to 2007. But still, that's a heck of a lot of years. And it's just, yeah, it's. I don't know. One other thing that I have to say, Jose Canseco's Hall of Fame speech would be so much fun. Like that would be my favorite thing. I've never been to an induction ceremony, but I would probably have to go for that. I really should have made it for Buck O'Neill's, but with COVID, it's just haven't been doing a ton of traveling, but man, Canseco's speech would be a delight.
Oh man. You know, there's even more candidates. I would love to see Julio Franco.
Oh,
like,
sure.
Just for his like his world traveler career, like that, like give me a 1 hour speech. Like I just want to listen to Julio Franco tell me about his career, you know, that type of thing. We haven't gotten into any relievers who.
Yeah, I was gonna say somebody like a Tom Henke. I mean, probably not quite a Hall of Famer, but he's not terrible either. I mean, it wouldn't be a bizarrely bad choice if he ever got in. It would be a little questionable if he got in front of a bunch of other people who we've been talking about over this last hour. But yeah, I mean, Dan Quisenberry.
He's my favorite of the relievers. Yeah. Franco, it's, you know, Franco's numbers are right there with a lot of the others too.
100%. Yeah. No question.
Kent Tekulve.
Oh man, I wasn't it Tekulve who found out recently that this was it the Spinners Rubber Band Man was his warm up music for. Oh, oh dude, it was great. I had to like listen to that song again after.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. So this has proven that you know, one good thing about the slow pace of players elected into the Hall of Fame means that we can kind of talk about it ad nauseum for what is now even the 20th episode of this podcast. So, you know, there's always plenty to talk about here and we're just getting started on this year. So I'm sure that you and I will be meeting up at least to discuss the results of this one, the BBWA ballot, results of the BBWA ballot, and maybe I'll see if I can get some folks on in between as well.
Yeah.
But Graham, thank you so much for joining to react to this ballot tonight.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, totally. Yeah. When I knew this ballot was coming down, this is what we do. I mean, you and I are kind of the guys for this and I really appreciate too what you've done putting this podcast together because I'm not as much of a technical person. So I wasn't going to do this, but you've been awesome about getting this set up, and I'll come on here anytime you want to talk.
Well, I don't get to see people as often as I would like to, because many of my friends live across the country like you do. So I figure, you know, when we get together to chat, might as well record it, because I know that there are at least, you know, a few other people that would want to hear it. And I want to thank everybody for their questions, too, because a lot of great ones here that really help steer the conversation. What are you supposed to say when you're a podcaster? So you can like rate and review the podcast and subscribe. If you haven't, but if you're listening to this, honestly, you probably already have, or maybe you just clicked on a link on Twitter, which I'll keep doing anyway. But anyway, if you have any nerdy Hall of Fame friends who would be interested in this type of thing, feel free to share it with them. And yeah, I appreciate Graham coming on, and I appreciate everybody for listening, and we'll do this again soon.
All right. Awesome. Thanks so much, Adam.
Thank you.